Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the June 7 edition of Commodity Week. From the corn pit, the charts show outside reversals in both the July and the December. We'll try to figure out what that means today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll hear from Daryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois. Our panelists today include Dan Zwicker of CGV Enterprises. He's from Mandeville, Louisiana. Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County. And Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's just start our discussion this afternoon with this question. Bill Mayer, we'll begin with you. The condition of the corn crop has always been an important part of the growing season. Many know, of course, that this was a late start to the growing season, but the crop looked awfully good, at least up until we got Monday's crop progress report. What do you think about it today?
Well, I guess if I try to evaluate that, Todd, I'd kind of divide it into three areas. I think obviously, the corn that's in the ponds and underwater is deteriorated or died for the most part. I think we've got some areas where there's just the ground was just so saturated that we were hearing here late week as things kind of dried up and got a little bit warmer that there's some real problems out there from a nitrogen problem, yellowing corn and that type of thing. But then I think you've got a big majority of the corn that probably looks really pretty good. The stands are there and it looks pretty good. Hadn't been affected by the water adversely from this standpoint. So I guess if I were to put it all together, I'd say maybe the crop has stayed pretty much the same or maybe a little bit of slight improvement over the week.
Elaine Cubb, your view from Elkhorn, Nebraska?
Well, I'm actually up in South Dakota, so I can give you the whole Western Corn Belt viewpoint today.
All right.
And I largely agree with Bill that especially out here where there was a drought a few weeks ago, now we're kind of out of the drought. The rain has really been a net benefit, and even if it gets planted late, we switch to later varieties and life goes on. But I will say the next thing that's coming down the pike, and that I look at these fields and they look a little short. I mean, this is June 7th, and we would ordinarily like to see them a little taller, a little more green matter so that they can take advantage of the early summer. But they're short, and that's consistent with you look at a map of the normal growing degree days, and we are behind. We're about 10% behind what is normal for this time of year, and that's true all up and down the Eastern Corn Belt, Western Corn Belt, pretty much everywhere except Ohio, particularly when you get south into Louisiana that Dan can probably talk about.
And then, of course, Dan Zwicker, and I believe, Dan, you're not in Mandeville, but maybe Waco, Texas this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm in Waco, Texas, and we got our corn's quite tall, but it don't count. but I am on my way to Illinois on Monday, so I will be up in the state of Illinois next week, so I'll at least get a good chance seeing the corn crop firsthand. I mean, from my point of view, it's all been, you know, what we hear is going on, and I think for the most part, the trade kind of feels that the rating levels will probably stay unchanged on Monday afternoon. I don't think there was any improvement. and we still have a lot of corn yet to really plant. And probably some of that corn that's underwater or those acres that are underwater may not ever get planted to corn.
I just might add one thing. The clients I've talked to, like in Ohio, they're actually needing some rain and looking for some rain to come in. They're getting kind of dry over there. So that is one thing that the crop looks good, but they're wanting to get some rain soon.
As we opened our program, Dan, I talked about a couple of things that happened in the corn pit. Let me go through the numbers very quickly. July contract at a high this week at $6.74, low at $6.43 3/4. It settled at $6.66 1/4, up 4 1/4 cents, posted an outside up week, but did not fill the gap that was left on the week of March the 25th. And the December corn contract at 558.5 also posted an outside week, but it was not up, but rather down, and it finished 8 3/4 lower, and it, too, did not fill a gap, though that one was just 2 weeks old. How do you read them?
Well, I guess whatever story you want to talk about, you could probably talk about the corn. I'm probably more interested in the new crop at this point. And for the month of May, Dease Corn closed out the month with a reversal to the upside. I do know that this week is a reversal down, but we finished strong. We basically reversed the reversal that started on Monday back to the upside and on yesterday, and then had good follow-through strength there on Friday. So even though we did close lower, the overall chart picture of December corn, I think, is in good position to extend its move as we go through June. And I think that we're going to go on up and slice through that 573 area, which was our most recent high. And then we'll kind of go from there.
Elaine, do you suppose that next week when the USDA World Agricultural Outlook Board releases the WASDE, or World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates, that it will change a number that supports a higher move in the corn pit?
Yeah, and I do think that, particularly after looking at what they did in May, it's fairly unusual for them to go in and start adjusting yield numbers already in May. But they were willing to do that. They looked at the late planting and they adjusted the yield numbers down. So I suspect that coming into this June report, because there's more confirmation of late planting, they might adjust the yield numbers down, and they almost certainly will adjust the acreage numbers down, and that's very, very rare. That's only happened like twice in the past 20 years, and there's actually, because farmers usually just don't do it, right? Usually you just find a shorter season crop or seed, and rather than switching to soybeans. But in 2013, particularly in Iowa, where there's just so much of it and they really are very sensitive about time, I really do think that there will be acres switched over to soybeans, probably happening right now. So I think that USDA will probably reflect that in the report next week, and that will be influential to the markets.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure, being in the crop insurance business like we are, as well, there will be some prevent plant. There will be some stuff that doesn't get switched to beans. It will just be not planted, I think. So I think we'll have a change in the acres on corn, and I think that will show up in the USDA report next Wednesday myself.
I think, Dan, when we talked to you on Thursday, you talked about 3 million acres, maybe less. Is that the number you're still working with?
I think so. I mean, I think we're at least the consensus is that Monday's number is going to be about 95% complete. That leaves 5%, and that kind of leaves the kind of 4 to 5 million. We might get a couple million and a half of that planted. So I think we're looking at maybe somewhere around 3.5 million slippage. It could be, you know, a little less than that. Could be a little bit more, but that's my best guess. And that's, you know, based upon what USDA tells us at 97.3. Now, that number could be high or that could be low. We don't know. But whatever the case is, we're supposed to get a final number, planted number here at the end of the month.
And then, Elaine, if you start doing the numbers and calculating what total production might be, if we were to lose 3 to 4 million acres, And have you done the numbers to show what a 158, a 155, a 152, what production actually looks like? And can you give us an idea where you think corn might go?
Yeah, I still think you're looking at above a 14 billion bushel crop. And at the end of the day, we're probably still going to, they can still make some adjustments. They were very generous for the feed and residual usage in May, and so they could trim that back so you'd end up with some ending stocks around 1.5 billion bushels, which would be much, much more comfortable, much, much more adequate than we anything we've seen in the past 3 years. That would be quite normal, and particularly since we've built so much storage over the past decade, I think that that's going to be very comfortable for the markets. And so overall, even these adjustments that have been made, we're still not looking at as dire of a situation as we had in 2013, about, you know, in July or of 2012, I mean, last summer.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I have kind of put, if you go with like 86 million harvested and you at 156 yield, you come out with about $1.8 billion carry out, $1.5 billion to $1.8 billion, depends on where you want to put the demand. It seems to me like we almost need to think about yields down to 150 area or so before we really get into, as Elaine was alluding to, more of a dire type situation.
Okay, Dan, so your numbers, do you see it in a dire situation or something more familiar?
Well, I think the biggest problem with USDA's numbers is their demand numbers. I think that they used in May are probably a billion bushels too optimistic. So I think the trade feels that even if we did lose a billion off of the crop, through reduced acres and reduced yield, and have the crop slip back to 13 billion, that we're still not at a real tight situation. We still have probably an adequate supply. The thing of it is, though, that you got to keep in mind is it wasn't too long ago, and the mentality is still there that we're going to have a real big crop, and we're going to have a very loose balance sheet. But you know, the experience over the past 3-4 weeks or the past month is that supplies are shrinking. And anytime you get into a situation where the crop is shrinking, the market has to respond to it. And I think that basically what accounts for the rally that we've seen in these corn and November beans. And I think when you look at the planting dates, you know, we got a long ways to go before this crop is put away, and we're probably talking about we're needing good August weather basically to finish out the crop. And August is not necessarily a good month to receive a lot of Midwest rains.
Yeah, and I think the demand side of it is a key area. And just as an example for our listeners to give you an idea of why we're facing some poor demand prospects is, I think last week there was some corn sold, I believe, from Brazil into Korea, I believe it was, and it was about 40 cents a bushel cheaper than anything that could have been bought out of the United States for October. This is for new crop. So I think that's what we're facing, and, you know, we need to get competitive or we're going to see a weaker demand.
Elaine, as I listen to this, it sounds to me as if there is reason for producers to pull the trigger, at least on some more bushels, maybe. But crop insurance is in place. Maybe you have some different ideas.
No, and I say that even generally agreeing with Dan's idea that it's a bullish chart, and that if you wanted to be a speculator and gamble on this, you would be bullish on it and expect it to maybe reach levels above 575 in the new crop. But it really has not found any love above 575 for the past year, well, the past 6 months anyway. So I certainly think it makes sense to have a pretty good chunk of the new crop sold as a hedge to arrive with the idea of locking in some strong basis, particularly in local areas if you're in Iowa where they may not have the corn that they were expecting.
Yeah, I would agree. We tried to add to our sales once we got up above the insurance level there, the 565 to 570 on this last run up. So I think right now, if you've done that, you probably can be a little bit patient here and wait. I guess I kind of think that we could even see the January high around that $6 mark come into play at some point as we go through the next 30 days.
Dan, I know you don't make these calls too much anymore, but what's your feeling about this?
The odds favor that the calendar year high will be made yet during June or July, so I guess I'm still in the camp that there's reasonable chances or expectations that these corn is going to pop out that 605. Some of my cyclical work would favor that maybe this market is going to be hot all summer. We could have a good rally maybe all the way into July, August. there's some other exotic things that I'm looking at to go along with that cycle. But, monthly reversal ups, I got to respect. So far, we're going to follow through on that. This crop is off to a rough start, and a lot of times it's kind of like a position, bad position. Once you got a bad position, it never gets better. It usually gets worse. So I'm in the camp that maybe this crop still has a lot of difficulty in front of it before the combines roll.
Well, you're listening to Commodity Week. This is the June 7 edition. Our panelists include Dan Zwicker, who you just heard. Bill Mayer is here in studio. And in Elkhorn, Nebraska, Elaine Cubb. We'll be back with them. We'll talk about soybeans as we return. Some other numbers. July wheat this week settled at 696 and a quarter. It was down 9 and a quarter. And the feeder cattle finished 70 cents lower at 143.62 and a half. Hogs were up 235 at 96.20. Back in 2 minutes.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. We had a cool and somewhat drier week in Illinois. Rainfall was less than half an inch across much of the state. Most of that rain fell early in the week, and it was followed by mild temperatures and more sunshine, which helped dry out some of those waterlogged fields. We got some preliminary numbers for May, and it turns out to be the 12th wettest on record was 6.9 inches. That's 2.3 inches above average. The statewide precipitation for March, April, and May together was 16.7 inches, which is 5.3 inches above average, and the 5th wettest spring on record. By contrast, spring of last year was much drier, with only 7.8 inches of precipitation. According to the National Weather Service, there is a 40 to 60% chance of rain on Saturday night. Sunday and Monday, the potential for rainfall is between a half inch to an inch north of Interstate 55 and less than half an inch south of Interstate 55. There is another chance for rain on Thursday as the next system moves in. Warmer and more humid conditions will prevail this week. Highs will be in the 70s in northern Illinois and in the upper 70s in central Illinois, and in the upper 70s and into the 80s in southern Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the June 7 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. Let's take a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on Friday afternoon. The July contract for the week had a high of $15.49 in the bean pit. The low there at $15.09 and a settlement price 18 and a quarter cents higher than the previous Friday settlement price at $15.28 and a quarter. November beans at $13.30 and a quarter, up 26 cents. And bean meal settled $4.52.50. It was up $5.30. When you look at the bean market, Elaine Cubb, what do you see that strikes you as fundamentally good?
Fundamentally good as in fundamentally bullish?
Yes.
I would say that just today or even just this week, you started to get the impression on the new crop market that the market was not only concerned about the late progress or the wet, the seed that might be in the ground being wet and struggling, but also to the fact that it might be receiving some acres from corn. But as Bill mentioned earlier, there's probably going to be some acres just entirely lost from beans, because farmers will plant all the corn they have and then just give up on the bean acres when you get to the middle of June or the next couple of days when you are starting to lose or starting to be trimmed on your crop insurance guarantees. So fundamentally, you're looking at actual lost acres for soybeans also. That starts to kind of be a consideration. And also the longer-term ideas of the Brazilian currency and the Argentine currency, that thrashing around and affecting how much of the South American supplies are going to be released.
The prevent plant thing, I just explained that. It gets kind of complicated, but what bottom line is there comes some situations where it's more economical for the farmer to take the prevent plant on corn and not plant the soybeans. I mean, that's the reality of the situation, and that's why I think that we will possibly see. But the weather's going to have something to do with that over the next next 2 weeks here, too. But I would agree with Elaine that I think the beans that won't get planted are bullish, but I guess I'm a little bit concerned with the fact that I think we will see additional acres of beans that will come in. And I guess I'm in the camp of being pretty aggressive here on getting coverage on, and how you do that depends on whether you got beans planted or not, for one thing, and, you know, how high a percentage of beans you already have sold.
Dan, from your view there at the port in New Orleans, will demand continue for soybeans to be in a high gear?
Well, we got a problem. We've got a lot of soybean meal sales on the books for export. So the crusher is going to have to crush to meet that demand, and it's very difficult to find U.S. inventories. Either farmers have got them locked away in caves someplace, or they're totally out of them. So soybeans from South America is being imported into the United States to meet some of that crusher demand. Now, it's not a big, large amount, but we are seeing that happen, that South American beans are working their way into the U.S., into the crusher to crush to meet that export sales demand for soybean meal. So that's very positive. And I think you'll see that reflected probably in next week's supply-demand report, because I think, you know, carryover is going to be at bare minimums because, like I said, we're already seeing the soybeans come in. And technically, the bean market is in excellent shape, I think. November soybeans to try to go on up and kind of visit this 14-something area. That would be about a 38% retracement back toward the November high that we lost from last summer. So I do think that there's reason to believe that this November beans has a little more punch in it as we go down the road. And, you know, a lot of that, as Bill mentioned, is going to depend upon planting and whether or not we get all the soybean acres planted like Elaine mentioned.
That wraps up this front edition of Commodity Week. In just a moment, we'll hear from Daryl Good.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Earlier in this week, I spoke with ag economist from the University of Illinois, Daryl Good, about the corn and the soybean markets. We started with corn and the condition of the crop.
I think in the case of corn, for the corn that's planted and up, it's probably in generally pretty good shape. And I think still has very good yield prospects at this point. I think the bigger question is the unplanted acres or the replant acres for corn. What kind of acreage might we lose, or what kind of yield might we lose on the replanted acres? I think the consensus is that planted acres of corn might fall 3 to 4 million acres short of intentions of 97.3 million And that's probably a reasonable thought at this point. And then you start asking the question, what kind of yield do we need on those acres to meet prospective consumption for the year ahead? And, you know, rough numbers would say, if you believe USDA's kind of generous forecast, anything above 150 bushel corn would be an ample supply if we lose 4 million acres. I think at this juncture we have prospects for yield at least at that level and probably considerably higher.
What does it tell you about current price of December corn in that case?
You know, under the scenario that we have 155 bushel corn or better on 86, 87 million harvested, I would say December corn is a little on the high side, maybe not by a lot, but I'm not sure we would need cash prices above $5 under that scenario, and right now we're slightly above that. So I think it would give us some downside if that kind of crop materializes, but I wouldn't look for an extreme decline from the levels that we're at right now.
In your weekly Outlook post from a couple of weeks ago, you talked about soybeans just prior to May 31st, and the idea that the 75-cent increase in the price of soybeans may have been overdone, given that soybeans may or may not be at late planting. Has that changed much at this time?
You know, not a lot. I think there is some yield penalty for late planted soybeans, but it's certainly not as great as the penalty for late planted corn. And so I think we have lost some yield potential because we have an unusually large amount of the crop that's going to be planted late, probably the most since 1996. And so that's probably trimmed yield prospects, but I think we're still probably looking at, 43 bushel beans or better for the U.S., and we might actually pick up a few acres of soybeans, depending on what happens to the intended corn acres. And so I think we still have prospects for a very large soybean crop. And this rally that we've seen that's pushed prices back above the spring insurance price may be just a little bit overdone, but again, at this early juncture, I think it's legitimate to have some production risk reflected in the market.
There's production risk reflected in the market. Are you also of a mind that producers should take advantage of some of that pricing opportunity?
You know, again, I always fall back, as you know, Todd, on kind of the insurance prices as a benchmark for making marketing decisions. You know, November soybean futures temporarily moved well above that insurance price. It's dropped back down a bit now so that we're just marginally higher. And so I'm still of the kind of the mind that we don't need to be real aggressive if we have fairly high insurance coverage at this level on both corn and soybeans.
And finally, your view of supply and consumption for soybeans for the 2013-14 marketing year.
You know, I think we're going to continue to see very strong consumption of soybeans. A lot of talk about how many soybeans China really needs and how many South America will be able to supply. I think that's a very solid demand market, and we will see exports hold up very well. Maybe a little bit of weakness in meal and oil exports, but should see domestic consumption of both of those products supported by, one, biodiesel production, and two, some increase in livestock numbers. So I see a pretty strong demand base and not much of a buildup in inventories of soybeans during the year ahead. So it says from a historic standpoint, we still expect high soybean prices next year, maybe not the $14 plus that we experienced this year, but certainly well above long-term average.
Thank you, Darrell.
Thank you, Todd.
Darrell Good is an ag economist at the University of Illinois. We spoke with him earlier in this week. You've been listening to the June 7th edition of Commodity Week. Our thanks to Darrell and the panelists who were in studio or on the phone line with us, including Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing, and Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets. You have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.